Join us at The Hedge for a conversation about engineering, technology, and business.
In this episode, Russ White, Tom Ammon, and Nash King dig into ethics in IT.
Well, hello, Tom. I'm glad that you're back as co-host. You know, sometimes I have to fall to secondary co-host, and you know, it's...
I'm just a secondary too. I see how.
No. So, and tonight we have Nash with us, which you have never been on The Hedge before. Have you ever been on any of these podcasts, Nash? You sound very professional, by the way.
Thanks. I have literally never done a podcast before.
Oh my goodness. Nice. Very first podcast. And your audio sounds awesome for having never done a podcast before.
Yeah, I was singing at my computer to make sure it sounded good.
Oh, well, wow. We could do that. We'll just listen.
No, that's okay.
So tonight or this afternoon or where, I don't know. I always say tonight because that's what it is for me right now. But we're talking about ethics in IT, and we have some very problematic... I said that word again, Nash, and you know I shouldn't even say that. Anyway, you know, we always have these issues with ethics in IT, and for me, it's particular... I mean, I'm doing a PhD in philosophy, which some people know and some people don't, and so this is... in my area of study is technology and culture, and so, you know, it is a very rough area to get into, is to think about... personally, the decisions you make and how they impact your larger worldview and how they get it. So if anybody's listening, this is going to be a little bit different of a hedge because we usually talk about less heavy topics than this. Tom, Nash, I mean, any thoughts of where to start thinking about this particular problem or this particular space?
Well, I think the idea of what personal choices do you make in your career as you do the work that we do, I don't know. I think that's a good place to start. I think working in technology, we enable all sorts of things. We enable all sorts of different businesses and different choices for other people. So I think it's a really interesting realm, ethically mm-hmm. speaking. And there's a lot of things we can do that, you know, we could get ourselves into a place where we didn't want to be if we look back and say, what kind of person do I want to be and what kind of choices do I want to make? Yeah, I think it's a pretty interesting discussion.
Well, I'll give you an example of a couple of things I've run into, and these are out of books that I've read, and I'm not going to go deep into the names of the authors and stuff, but the idea that technology sometimes makes things possible and makes other things either difficult or impossible. And one very specific example is, used to be in the United States, all the cities were built on rivers, and if you grew up, you knew where all the rivers were. That was part of your life. You knew where all the rivers were. You knew where all the streams were. You knew where all the oceans were. And you basically knew where the prevailing winds were and what the tides looked like and everything else, because that was the primary mode of transportation. Now, with the construction of the interstate highway system, which is, of course, a technology. Now, it's not internet technology per se, but just talking about technology in general, And because of the railroad system that was built, all the cities started being built inland, away from the rivers. And now there are very few people in the world who can tell you where any river is, or what the nearest river to their house is, or what direction it flows at any time of the year, or any of that information. So it's made possible to build towns and cities, big cities, where we didn't have them before. But yet it's kind of culturally, we've lost something because of that technology in some sense. So just that concept of the technology isn't really neutral like we might think of it. We immediately want to say, oh, it's just neutral. People just use it for whatever they're going to. That's not really true. And that's kind of an issue that you deal with as a network engineer in your daily life, right? I mean, I don't know, Nash, any thoughts? I mean, you're kind of...
I'm just kind of blown away by the whole river thing. I grew up in a watershed. I live by a river now. The idea of not knowing where the rivers and the creeks and the winds are, that just, I can't imagine.
but it's true, right? I mean,
no, it is.
It's people don't know where they are anymore.
Yeah, they don't know where they are. And we have so much access to each other as well. Sorry, we start talking about like changing technology, and just because this might be a little bit tangent, but just because I've been a young woman on the internet, I just start thinking about the fact that it's really easy for people to find you now. And no one who developed that technology really thought about how easy it would make it to do things like stalk people and harass them.
And privacy is a big part of this, right? Privacy mm-hmm. is a big part of this. And so, like, even just, so bringing this back to the network, like,
sorry.
No, it's fine. Say that you're a network operator, right? And you are the IT guy that, or IT person, I shouldn't say, you know, guy is, but anyway, the IT person who is managing that network. What are you doing to protect the information of those people? Like, mm-hmm. as a daily decision, the people who work for the company that you run ops for, what are you doing to protect them? And I don't know. I mean, I'll bring it current moment for a second. DNS over HTTPS. I was just talking to a friend of mine who lives in Thailand, and the privacy implications of something as simple as that. And where does that go? It's very hard.
That brings up an interesting point of those who, like, if you have the capability to help protect somebody and they are not as knowledgeable or they're not as empowered as you are to protect themselves, is there a moral obligation there for you to do so? I personally believe that it is the responsibility of the strong to help protect the weak, just mm-hmm. in general. That's my personal feeling about it. And so if you take it into a technology context and you have the privacy of all these users for the DNS over HTTPS thing, so, you know, Firefox is going to be turning that on pretty soon. And you had a whole crowd of users at your company that probably don't even know what that is. So as the IT person, do you go in and do the stuff you need to do to override that? Or do you say, I don't want to deal with it. They don't really care anyway. They probably don't care about their privacy. Doesn't matter. I don't want to go do the work to override that. I mean, I think that's an example of a choice that's kind of in this realm.
And that may not even be a choice that an individual engineer gets to make. Like, if you're using a content filter that's predicated on DNS, management might say, no, you have to disable that. We don't care about privacy because at work, at least, we view the content filter as being more important. But so again, it's kind of, I guess there you run into how much privacy can you expect to have in the workplace?
And then even the question of trade-offs. I mean, I always say, if you haven't found the trade-offs, you haven't looked hard enough. There are people who are arguing that are making, I think, a cogent, coherent, good argument that DNS over HTTPS doesn't really solve any privacy issues. It actually can make things worse. What do you do with that, right? How do you adjudicate that? How do you understand that as a technical person, as an engineer? How do you deal with that type of problem? Do you go spend your time investigating it?
And there's a lot of avenues that you can take with that too, because you could say, well, the company decides, I don't, I'm just an individual contributor. It's not my decision.
Ooh, yeah.
But if you took that, I mean, but you do have a personal responsibility to teach the business and business leaders about the consequences of their choices. Mm-hmm. And if you just throw your hands up and say, well, it's not my decision, so I don't need to worry about it, then that's, that's going away. That's going to take you to a certain place that you may or may not want to go.
This might be harsh, but I feel like, if you just automatically throw up your hands and say, well, the powers that be at my company will figure it out and their choice is correct, you're not going to make it very far, or you're not going to be very happy in what you do. Because if you're not able to stand up and push back, then if something really bad happens, how are you going to have the experience of saying, well, I think that's a bad idea for this reason and that reason about something relatively smaller with regards to, say, a user's privacy or protecting company data? If you don't have the experience of defending something smaller, what are you going to do when it's something big?
Yeah, I really like that. That's building your ethical muscles. I think that's a really good, great, great, great point.
Yeah. Aristotelian virtue ethic is what that is called from the philosophy department.
See, we're going to get an education here.
I have some exposure to philosophy. I just got it through talking to people who read science fiction and fantasy. So they've all read these books. I haven't. I've just read, people's own work that's drawing on it.
So you know, thinking about that, that also puts, from a network administration perspective, that kind of puts security in a different light, doesn't it? It's not just, you know, like these DNS over HTTPS issues, things like that. It's also these issues around, am I protecting data exfiltration? Am I taking that my company has this data on their customers seriously? What am I doing with that?
Mm-hmm. Are you ensuring that you only have the minimum amount of data necessary to kind of both A, not basically have like this unexploded bomb of data sitting there, and B, just sort of generally not be invasive, for want of a better term?
And then how do you make those arguments, right? If you're a network engineer and you see something going on, you're an engineer of any kind in your company, are you prepared to make those kinds of arguments about maybe we're collecting too much data? Maybe we're not doing the right thing by putting this data in that location. Maybe we're not doing the right thing, you know, with our passwords. By the way, I personally think changing passwords every 6 months or every 3 months is ludicrous. Mm-hmm. But, you know, who am I? I'm not a security person, so.
I think you're preaching to the choir.
You know, it's pick a hard password and stick with it. It's like changing your password every 3 months is not really solving a problem that I can think of. But
the problem is the auditor's list.
Yes. Yes, I know. I know. So that's even an ethical issue, isn't it? Like, when do you do what the auditor tells you to do versus what you know is right? Mm-hmm. And how do you make those arguments? That's another entire.
Speaking of auditing, what do you guys think about this? Sometimes I've heard people talk about, especially for PCI audits, if you don't leave something there for them to find, if you don't leave them a couple of little breadcrumbs, then it's going to go off the rails. The audit's going to go off the rails. So I've heard some people say you have to leave some things unattended to. That way the auditor can find it. That way you can fix it. That way the whole system can run. What do you guys think about that?
You know, it's funny because I've actually had builders tell me the same thing when they're building houses.
Yep.
That they will intentionally like not tighten a light switch, because the inspector comes through and finds it and says, oh, I found your broken light switch, and they can mark it on their form and everybody's happy.
Yeah, I think it's honestly smart when you think about how humans work. You're like, here's an easy thing. Okay, I found the easy thing. Done. I don't need to keep going. But what's the purpose of the audit? Are you actually fulfilling whatever need you have there, or are you just passing the audit and like skipping out of class?
You're putting your answers on your smartphone, on your smartwatch, which, by the way, they're banning smartwatches in many classrooms now because people are putting their answers on the smartwatches.
Hey, back in my day, it was graphing calculators.
Yeah. Or itty bitty writing under your palm of your hand or on the wrist or something, you know, they used to do that too. Yeah. I mean, people have always cheated, I guess. So starting from the very beginning, boy, we've crossed a wide circuit already and haven't resolved anything, have we?
You can't resolve anything though. You can think about it and you can try to do better, but there's no final answer on any of this.
I thought it was 47, 42. Sorry.
42.
42. That's what I thought was 42. So we can just close the podcast right there because we found the answer. It's 42. No.
The little mice will be very happy.
That's very sad. Yes. So I mean, starting from technology really isn't neutral, and thinking that you need to think about how your company is using technology. Are you comfortable with that? How are you dealing with that as a person? And beyond that, how are you dealing with security? And are you taking security as just a checklist, or are you taking security and privacy as real things? I mean, this impacts real people. And what are you doing with that? And I think that's a huge ethical can of worms that we as network engineers, we don't really like to talk about this stuff. We'd rather talk about how to configure BGP. Or not.
It is easy, people.
Or not.
So, yeah, I mean, I would just like to slap a firewall in front of the whole thing and just call it done, right?
And okay, that doesn't. Have you actually like looked at your firewall config and made sure that, say, your other clients can't like cross the streams and get into each other's DMZs?
how well do you know how well it works? Mm-hmm. And then knowing how, if you don't know how well it works, you just know how to configure it. So mm-hmm. this goes back to the whole thing of how skilled are you as a practitioner? And is there an ethical requirement to be better skilled in order to solve the problems that need to be solved in a good way, right? In the right way. So, yeah, I mean, it's,
I think there's a sort of a crossover here between ethics and craftsmanship. So there's a lot of times when my personal guide is, do I want to put my name on that? Do I want someone to know that that was my work? Sometimes I use that to motivate myself to finish something or to do a good job or something. I think there's an intersection between craftsmanship and ethics, because do you want your name on that decision? Do you want your name on how that was carried out? Can be a pretty good marker.
Yeah, well, that's, by the way, Tom, now you're in the Platonic world. Yes. And you know, this nice. All falls back into the virtue ethic as well. So if you're listening to this and you don't know what I'm talking about when I say the Aristotelian virtue ethic, you should go look it up. It's a pretty fascinating area of study. And it makes a lot of sense. I mean, essentially, all Aristotle is saying is that you make good moral choices by reflex, because you have practiced making good moral choices in less than important situations. So, you know, the important decisions are generally made on a snap. You don't have time to think about it the way you want to. There's a lot of conflicting interest points. There's a lot of overriding, and, you know, there'll be times when you really don't want to make that decision, even though you know it's the right thing to do. And the way to make that decision morally is to build up your moral muscles through the virtue ethic. And so you practice making good decisions so that you can make good decisions when you're under stress. And C.S. Lewis talks about this as well. There's a couple of passages in C.S. Lewis for anybody who follows, who talks about this as well. It's been picked up by some modern writers in the virtue ethic realm. There's a couple of really good books that are more recent that are kind of philosophical, but they're actually really good.
And that's actually an idea that you'll see a lot of younger folks in the internet generation work on. Just, we very much have this idea of, if you make a mistake, apologize and then do better next time. And what you're doing better at is, like, say, being respectful of someone's choices, or keeping in mind your ability to hurt other people. The more you practice doing that, the less likely you are to stomp through something and just, without even realizing it, hurt people really badly. I'm trying so hard not to say the feminism word here, but there we go.
Right. Well, right. And I think that now I'm going to bring, you know, go back to the technology world and say, this has a lot to do with agile. Mm-hmm. You don't fix blame, you fix problems. And I don't think we get that a lot of times. We do a lot more fixing blame mm-hmm. than we do fixing problems. And I think that's an important point to make, just in the way we deal with other people. It's just, you know, don't beat them up or whatever. The concept of failure that is not, that, you know, no blame follow through, or no blame go back and figure out what happened, is really a useful thing in helping people understand or how to, you know, working in this realm that we're in now.
Yeah, and I think accepting responsibility as well. Basically, you have to know that what you did caused a harm. And then what you do from there is try not to do it again, and other people kind of just move on and give you a chance to not do it again. So, I mean, to me, this is kind of something I've been thinking about as I look at, say, work situations where maybe you're being asked to support something that you disagree with, kind of keeping in mind the idea that maybe you can't at this job, but at a future one, you can do better and be more congruent, I guess, with your own internal sense of ethics. I'm a little bit scattered. I'm so sorry.
No, it's actually, that's fine. No, I think that's good. Yeah, I think that that kind of does bring in another topic though, right? Which is, you are doing something, I mean, it's a struggle, Because you know that no matter what you build, it's being used for things that you don't agree with.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to internally figure that out for yourself, what that means and how far you're willing to go to support things you don't agree with, so to speak, as an engineer.
Sorry, Russ. Especially as a network engineer, if you think about, you know, the people that build the roads in any country, that road can be used for all sorts of things, and it can also be used for all sorts of really terrible things.
Mm-hmm.
Do you say I'm not going to be a builder of roads because somebody's going to use it, you know, someone's going to use it in a way that I didn't intend or I didn't agree with? And I get what you're saying, Russ, with the, we can't just, you know, assume that we don't have any responsibility for the tools, but there is also another dimension of this where if you say, I'm not going to allow my work to be used for anything other than what I think is the right thing, then you'll ultimately end up doing nothing professionally. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying you should, you know, people should say, whatever, I don't have to have any responsibility here. But I also think there's the people have to make their own choices, and the way people use their own agency, that's the interplay there, is how do you let your interaction with their agency determine your choices?
Right. And I think there what you run into is trying to do the best you can to understand the unintended consequences of what it is you're doing. Just in the back of your mind, realize that you don't know. I mean, the way we put it in just thinking in terms of the way we think of it in terms of technology, or at least I think of it in terms of technology, is when I develop any protocol or I work on something new in the protocol world, I need to think in terms of not what I intend to do with this technology, but the maximum range of things that can be done with it,
mm-hmm.
right? Because that's where it's going to be used. That's how it's going to be used, is the maximum range of things that you can do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the other side, I can't change the way other people use it, but I can think about things like, if I'm building roads, what is this going to do to the way people see their world?
So you're saying there's virtue in simply considering that this might be used for something that is utterly wrong. You're saying that is that a redeeming? I mean, is it good enough to make that consideration?
I don't think it's redeeming. I think that there are things that are inside your control and things that are outside your control. And by the way, this I think goes back to the heart of the whole ethical issue as a network engineer. I can only protect my users' data so far. I can only protect their privacy so far. There are things I can do. There are things I cannot do. And knowing my own limits as an engineer is a major part of it.
If you don't know your own limits, then you're just going to stress yourself out trying to affect things that you just can't change. Not the same thing as there not being things that you can change. You just have to figure out, like, what is my locus of control?
The way I think about this, not in ethical concerns, but in, you know, trying to develop solutions that meet requirements, is I always think about a ladder. People are going to use ladder for all kinds of crazy stuff and all kinds of crazy stuff that they shouldn't use a ladder for. And when I've tried to design networks specifically, I think about the ladder. Like the people that figured that out, how to build a ladder, I'm sure that if they saw what some of us humans use that for, they would just be, you know, probably disgusted and annoyed. But maybe you can, you know, there's also the things you could do with a ladder that you shouldn't be doing with a ladder. But, you know, it probably, if they were to think about that while they were building it, then it probably had some consequences, some positive consequences for the people who were using the ladder in the right way. It probably made things safer for the people who are using it the right way. So I don't know, maybe that's a...
Yeah, or you're a ladder maker and you just slap labels on it until people stop using it, you know.
Yeah, but the labels usually come from being sued because someone's tried to... chair labels. Someone tried to use a chair as a jack for their car. So now it has a warning label saying, don't use it as a jack for their car. You can't always predict what interesting life choices people are going to make.
Correct.
You can try, but people are creative.
Yep, they are. And it is. That's part of the problem, right? Is that you don't know where people are going to use things. But on the other hand, again, you can think about those larger culture issues, mm-hmm. right? If I go out and I build a system that collects, I'll give you an example, actually a personal example. I was once asked by somebody at a company I worked for to build a system that would allow him to collect the names, the wives' names, and the children's names, and the dates of birth and everything for everybody who worked in that organization. Is it a valid request? Well, the position this person was in was, this was in the military. Mm-hmm. And so the position this person was in was, if one of those people got in an accident or was killed on duty or something, they had to know this information. Okay, so it's a valid request, right? There's a reason they're asking for this. But on the other hand, is it really valid? Are there other places they could get that information? And is it right to build it like on a personal computer sitting in some office someplace?
Oh, yikes.
Right? Mm-hmm. You know, so you have to think through the whole situation and think, what could that be used for? Where would that information leak? What would happen if that leaked? How can I do my best to not have that be a problem, right?
Right. What's the potential harm? Because that's a significant amount of very personal information.
Yes. Oh, yes. Definitely. Definitely. And this is why, you know, when I look at technology and culture, I worry a lot about, we're just doing things and we're not really thinking through, what does that mean? Like, what's the ultimate end here? Where are we going with this? And so, obviously, I'm not a Luddite because I work in technology, but at the same time, I do worry about it.
I mean, I saw a joke recently about tech enthusiasts versus people who work in tech. The tech enthusiast has a smart everything in their house. The person who works in tech has like a toaster with a hammer next to it as just a warning in case the toaster gets any ideas. And it was like, okay, ouch, that's... you don't need to personally attack me on the internet, but all right, fine.
but it's true.
It is.
It is. Most of the people I know who work in social media don't have that many social media accounts. It's really funny. They just don't.
Yeah, I recently started using Twitter, and it's very strange talking to people and having it be even remotely tied to my real life identity, just because I come from a background where you don't social media, because right. We look at it and it's like, and they're getting this info, and who knows where it's being stored and who has access to it.
And it's even, I mean, really, once you see how the sausage is made, you don't want none of that sausage.
Yeah, I learned that one when I was 8 and watched a Julia Child cooking show.
Yeah, you know? Wow. Okay. I don't think I want that sausage. Yeah. So it's a thing, right? It's a thing. But yet, you know, you work in this area and you got to think about it. So I think it comes down to this. Be aware. Like, what are the ultimate, what can you get to? What's going on here? And what can you do? What are your limits on trying to do the best that you can to limit any ethical damage that might happen because of your actions? And can you argue against your company or whoever it is doing unethical things? And can you help people who are trying to use this technology, help them to use it more ethically? I think those are big issues.
And I think you have to be kind with yourself, because you may not be able to have the impact that you want to have. And you can't, if you destroy yourself because you're not able to prevent something that you think is, you know, putting people at risk of harm or privacy invasion or whatever, if you destroy yourself because you failed, then you won't be there in the future to try again.
Yeah. I think that's really important. I think that's a really important point. And it's a very good point. So go ahead,
Tom. Just one more thing made me think of was a big part of, I think, being successful in making ethical considerations is putting responsibility where it really goes, right? If it really is your responsibility to do this, then you should do it and you should not shirk it and you should make this decision and not pander it, not push it off onto somebody else. But if it's somebody else's decision and you have a part in it, but it's their decision, it's also just equally as wrong for you to turn, take that burden on yourself when you're not responsible for it. I think you just have to do what's in your sphere of influence to do.
Right. I think it's really good.
I think you also have to think about you're usually not actually alone. we have this tendency, I think, as a culture in the US at least, to think that it all has to be like one brave individual making the change and making the choice. But at least where I work, it's never just me. There are always other people that I can enlist when I need support convincing management to make what I think is a better choice.
Thanks, Nash, for coming on. Terrific.
Thank you.
Terrific show. Now, I assume since you're not on social media, nobody can get in touch with you anyplace. You just hide in a corner.
I'm dealing with it, okay? I'm trying.
So what's your Twitter handle so everybody can follow you?
Oh, God. All right, fine. Nice. I'll give you it.
Nice.
Okay. I'll probably have to type this for you. It's at Gamma Capricorni.
Okay. If you send it to me, I'll get it put on the show notes.
Yeah, no one can actually spell it from hearing it said.
And Tom, where can people get in touch with you?
I'm on LinkedIn. I'm also on Twitter at Tom Ammon. And okay. Now I'm thinking of a Twitter handle that's like a random string of numbers and
stuff. It's not actually random. Nash is short for Nashira, which is the name of the star Gamma Capricorni.
Oh, okay.
Cool. Just teasing.
All right. And I'm Russ White. You can always find me at rule11.tech. And we hope you join us the next time on another great episode of The Hedge.
Thank you for joining us. You can find The Hedge at rule11.tech.